All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View for Monday evening, September 26th. This is your humble host, PK, speaking. I got a friend on that I'm going to be interviewing shortly. First of all, let me say once again thank you to BBSRadio.com for their tireless efforts of promoting free speech with alternate media. And I would like to say that I was at the recent CPAC convention in Orlando where we heard the Republican candidates make their speeches and all the hoopla that was going on down there. And as you know, I'm a Ron Paul supporter, so we'll be talking about that a little bit later. He came in fifth yesterday, but all is not lost. I shall not weep. My guest tonight is my friend Scott, and Scott is a state membership chair for the Campaign for Liberty, a tall, good-looking gentleman, and I say that in a very heterosexual sexual fashion. But anyway, I'm glad that Scott is available. We're going to talk about the campaign and his views on certain things, his libertarian background and whatnot. So with that, I'm going to welcome Scott to a Third Stream View. Scott, are you out there, my friend?
Yes, sir. It's good to be here.
Welcome to Third Stream View. Would you care for some tea or coffee?
Sure, sure. Cream and sugar, please.
Sorry, it's all self-service here. And I want you to know that before we continue that I have used marijuana in the past. But hopefully that shouldn't affect anything because my mind is pretty crisp and bright. Again, thank you for coming on. I got to hang with you a bit over the weekend at the CPAC convention in Orlando at that massive, very most impressive convention center, which I hadn't really been to before. And so it was fun being in the company of fellow Ron Paul fans and advocates and other libertarians and other Republicans. And I don't dare I include rhinos and neocons, but I thought the event went pretty well.
Yeah, it did. It was my favorite debate so far. I also got to sit in Ron Paul's VIP section up front and shake his hand between during commercials, which was a lot of fun.
Well, I also I shook your hand, which shook Ron Paul's hand.
Yeah, yeah. So you definitely got some skin cells anyway on there.
Yeah, yeah. I thought he did well, but he wasn't asked enough questions, you know, as usual.
Yeah, that's the big thing. You know, John Tate, one of his co-campaign manager with Jesse Benton, just sent out an email today talking about that. He says here less than 5 minutes. So, yeah, just over 4 minutes for six questions.
Wow. But I do know that whenever he does, as you know, whenever he does answer a question, whenever he does, he's to the point, he's succinct and articulate, and, you know, he doesn't ramble on. And even though, you know, his sometimes his opportunities are slim with these debates, when he does speak, he's right on the money.
Yep. Yep. Like the first question he was asked on Thursday night was, you know, how would you as president do a better job supporting the 10th Amendment? And he said, well, I'd veto every bill that wasn't consistent with the 10th Amendment. And he paused, and they were wondering if he was going to go, sir, you have a lot of, and Chris Wallace said, sir, you have a lot of time remaining. Would you like to continue? Then he went on and, you know, built on the argument. You got to wonder, you know, he's crazy, clever like a fox, if he meant to do it that way to try to kind of say, you guys aren't going to give me time anyway, you know? So I'll just put the truth here to this.
I like the way that he always brings in foreign policy whenever he can, explaining the fact that since that so much is spent on that, of a waste of tax dollars, that we can't solve these other problems till that is seriously addressed, and he never backs down from that.
Mm-hmm. All empires end poorly. They go broke from being spread too thin.
That's right, and of course they destroy their currency. So, you know that, I know that, we know that. Don't the feds, haven't the feds figured that out? Their little money machine, the Federal Reserve, is, going to self-circuit, I believe.
Yeah, well, they're all hogs at the trough, you know, good luck pulling them away. And nobody wants to be the one to say, let's all pull away. You know, they want to get theirs first. And they always say that the last thing a dying regime does is loot the treasury. It seems like they're piling on at this point. It's getting worse, not better.
Well, you say they're hogs at the trough, and I completely agree, but there's going to come a time where that trough dries up, and there's not going to be anything for them.
Yeah, exactly. It'll just be eat themselves to death, and we go along with it.
Yeah, that's the trouble. They take us down with us, and I always rail against the military-industrial complex. As we know, the Constitution, of course, calls for a defense, and you and I and a lot of others, we have no problem with that, but we do have a problem with a massive empire and a massive military budget, which I like to say is sucking valuable investment capital away from other consumer things and commercial things that the economy needs to thrive.
Yeah, all government action does that, you know.
So, yeah, that's true. And of course, I'm not.
War is the most wasteful, you know, if you know the broken window fallacy, which most of your listeners probably do.
Right.
You blow things up. Could you add to the economy? No.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of these idiots thought that some of these are hurricanes or even tornadoes. Well, that, you know, it stimulates things. Yeah, right. You know, terrible.
Tom Wood says that. Dr. Tom Wood.
Well, I'm a big fan of his. It was nice. Yeah, it was also nice. I got to hang a bit with Tom DiLorenzo, Dr. DiLorenzo, at the convention. Of course, he wrote the Lincoln, the real Lincoln, and Hamilton's Curse, which I've been reading. Hamilton's Curse, and as you, I know, I think you've read it. And when I read it, though, I'm not done with it yet. But every page makes me angrier than the previous one, where you can see how Hamilton laid out this whole future mess, and Lincoln was a further advocate of the, you know, on Henry Clay.
The Hamiltonians versus the Jeffersonians.
That's for sure. So, what is your outlook on the near future of things? What do you think's like, how's the campaign going? What's your take on it?
I'm still very optimistic. Our numbers are 3 to 4 times what they were, you know, 4 years ago, and the message is the same, and it's just getting more attractive. And the worst thing to get, people are looking for the actual option that. It works, you know. The government didn't. We're not. America isn't prosperous because of the government. It's prosperous in spite of the government. And it, you know, all the magical things that got us here did so in spite of intervention of the government, not because of it. You know, free markets, freedom of choice, property rights, and those are the things that will, you know, individual liberty to do what you want to be prosperous. And that's the thing that will save us in the end. And hopefully, Dr. Paul's message will. Continue to resonate with the greater and greater percentage of people. Hopefully we can do very well in the early primary states, which gives us a better chance in the larger later states because you will become electable. Regardless, we've won the younger vote. If you go to any meetings for Dr. Paul, you'll notice the average person is about a generation younger than others, an establishment or even Tea Party meeting. You know, mainstream Tea Party, social conservative Tea Partiers. We consider ourselves libertarian Tea Partiers, a lot of us. But,
well, you're right about that. You're right about that age demographic. And when I speak to the younger fellows, oh, by the way, the older I get, the better I was, Scott. But putting that aside, whenever I speak to the younger folks at these conventions or Campaign for Liberty get-togethers, I always, you know, thank them for coming on board. And I do tell them in my own defense that I never voted. I voted Libertarian since 1980 until I got on the Ron Paul, you know, when I became a Republican so I could vote in the primaries. I said, but I never voted for any of these people who have created this debt and this whole problem. I say, I'm glad about that. And I empathize with your generation because they've stuck it to you with all this debt. So that's another reason why when Dr. Paul speaks, especially at universities, as you know, he has thriving, very enthusiastic crowds of our younger folks who see what's going on.
And these aren't just younger folks. These are the first adopters that they talk about in any movement. They're brilliant minds. These are, you know, four of our local members are girls that put out a video a week ago in their bikinis talking about monetary policy. They tried to get their video voted up on Fox to get on there, and they, you know, the question they asked, they're sitting around a jacuzzi in their teenies, and they've all read Ludwig von Mises, and they say, you know, how is wealth created? And these are brilliant girls. They've all read.
Well, that's great, and I would like to say that wealth creation has also led to the wonderful phenomenon of the bikini.
Yes.
it was not invented by communists or socialists.
There you go.
And I do right. praise the Brazilians for their take on swimwear also. Now, those things you were saying about earlier, a few sentences back where you were talking about how, you know, the markets have caused our economy to thrive and, you know, how we got to be where we are. I don't know that our current president would agree with you on that methodology, Scott.
Yeah, it's a shame that they don't embrace even these simple concepts and premises. But, you know, this amazing thing, this thing we call America, this, you know, productive wonder that once was, it's teetering under the weight. You know, imagine a really strong man, but you just keep piling on the weight, and eventually his legs are going to buckle.
It's definitely on the ropes, and as I like to say, Ron Paul is the Atlas who will not shrug.
That's a good one. I like that. Yeah.
Thank you. I wrote that. And I just thought of this one, too, in a humorous point of view, is that Herman Cain is the great white hope.
Yeah, you want to talk about those results at all?
Sure, sure.
What do you think of that? I mean, I was floored.
Let's hear your comments on those.
Yeah, I mean, 35%. I mean, who would have predicted that? It would be like watching, you know, the local college team, you know, whip up on the Super Bowl champions or the projected winners, you know. It's just that was out of the blue. I mean, if you take away Herman Cain, it was a horse race, real close. But he ran away with it. It was like if you've seen the movie Secretariat, where he wins by like 30 legs or whatever it is in the Kentucky Derby. You know, it's unbelievable. This was out of left field. I had heard that when he spoke, he got the biggest ovation by far. It was just a roar, and I missed it. But, you know, they said it was his typical style, you know, things that we might, as libertarians or you know, more intellectual thinkers might not get excited about, but it seems like sell well to some of these people. So, I don't know.
The sheeple liked it, yes. Mr. Cain.
Boxing got 1.5%. What the heck there? You know, that's interesting.
Well, Mr. Cain had the right mixture of apple pie and Chevrolet that appealed. to the masses, and it was a good speech. He's well spoken. You know, I'm glad he beat cancer. However, the real cancer is that he was a Fed chairman and he supported TARP.
Yeah, and these Tea Partiers, they, you know, bless their hearts, but I don't get it. You know, he speaks well and he's likable, and I guess they think he's not as bad as maybe Romney or Perry, but I think they'll end up going for Romney or Perry if those guys get elected. And people like us, we go the other direction. We think principle first. You know, there's not a lot of difference between Perry, you know, or Romney and Obama to us. I mean, I'd love to hear the difference. I keep asking people that. I'm sorry, but what's the difference? Tell me.
Well, the difference is in the spelling of their names.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I forgot the point I was going to make. But Herman Cain, I think I sort of think that this was a fluke, like Michelle Bachmann won in Iowa. Well, I was glad to see that she finished last yesterday.
Yeah, 1.4%, which means if there was 2,750 votes cast. No, 2,650. So 850 were not cast. Either they went home or never came. Assuming that those totals are correct.
right.
Yeah, that's 1% would be what, 26? So about 30, 35 votes she got.
Wow.
Unbelievable. About falling, right?
That's good. And I was surprised that Santorum finished slightly ahead of Dr. Paul.
Yeah, we were all surprised. But you take, you know, take the anti-establishment total, which would be Cain, you know, supposedly. The anti-establishment, not from our thinking, but generally.
Right.
And then add it with Ron Paul and who else? Let's say Bachmann, close to 50%. They're supposedly representing, you know, against the establishment. And then you got your two main guys, Perry and Romney, 15 and 14%. That's 29. That's less than K. Kane got by himself. This is really interesting to think and talk about, you know?
Right. I thought the Thursday night debate was more or less a large part of it was the Romney versus Perry hour.
So maybe they took each other down, huh?
Well, that'd be nice. And they were just nibbling around the edges of he said about their books and this and that. But obviously, as we know, they're both statists. But that's why we stick to our principles. And as you know, I'm very fond of saying, and I always get very good feedback, and people are impressed when I tell them this, is that I worked on Dr. Paul's 1988 campaign.
That's cool.
When he first ran as a libertarian. So I was an activist in that. I was at a county fair. I was handing out literature and Ron Paul promo, answering questions, doing whatever I could back then. So I feel like I'm just as consistent because I've always stayed the path. And I was delighted that he came back into politics and then ran for office again in 2008 for president. So naturally, I just jumped on it, eager to be part of it and to help out.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, you know. Consistency, and it's got to be so special for guys like you. I've talked to a few guys like you, like Tom Mundy and other local guys down here, and you know, having been a part of it since the beginning, and to see it finally doing pretty well, you know.
Well, oh yeah, definitely. I myself, you'll have to see. I don't know if you've got to see my bio for my site here, but I can't be bought and I can't be intimidated by the establishment. I would find it very easy to vote against. I would find it easy to be a Dr. No myself because I have no compulsion to follow the sheeple if that's the direction they're going and I think it's wrong or violates constitutional principles or the ethics of liberty. I would have no trouble saying, Scott, if I had a veto pen, it'd be worn out. They'd have to give me new ones.
Yeah.
And that only makes you look good in the long run because that's on your record. You vetoed. That's one good thing about Gary Johnson. He did veto a lot of things. And, of course, he'd be my second choice. He's a bit pro-war, I think. And I'm not a pacifist per se. I believe in a military and a defense, but I would never mislead. First of all, I wouldn't mislead our troops to get them killed mindlessly and unnecessarily.
Yep.
I spoke to a young fellow yesterday who was a Ron Paul supporter, and he was in Iraq. I think within the last 6 months, a young fellow, and he's on board. And I always thank the veterans and give them a special thanks. Especially anybody who's come over to our side who was a former neoconservative, because I have a big problem with neocons. A lot of people are upset with rhinos, as I am too, but the neocon mentality has infiltrated the Tea Party also, the pro-war, pro-empire.
They just stick to the things that the Tea Party was founded on. But, power is seductive, and having access to power is...
That's true. That's true, and that's where principles come in. You know, if it's constitutional, I'm there. And the Constitution is not a perfect document. I've rewritten my own sort of new version of it, which I call a secession solution, which puts a lot more teeth into restricting governmental power to what I think you and I agree what it would be to defending us, protecting our rights, and pretty much getting out of the way.
That the people have the right to abolish alter their government?
Definitely.
The only portion removed from the Declaration of Independence inside the Jefferson Memorial.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And you know, there's no dancing allowed there.
Yeah, they were all acquitted about a week ago.
Well, that's wonderful.
They're not acquitted.
It?
Charges were dropped, I guess. I'm sorry.
Now,
I'm a lawyer.
Oh, that's good, because I was thinking, didn't they recently dedicate the Martin Luther King effigy somewhere?
Yeah, that big statue.
Could you imagine them arresting black folks for dancing in front of that? Could you imagine what that would have caused?
Yeah.
I don't know that they did, but that was my thought when I heard that was going to open after this whole Jefferson mess. I thought, gee, are these idiotic cops, are they actually going to do that too? The scary thing is if they'll
arrest... I laughed because, so I'm clear on why I giggled there a little bit. I read the article about that. there were a lot of people that weren't happy with that monument for him.
Because it looked more like Chairman Mao?
He came off, yeah, my Angelou said he came off looking like arrogant. They took the quote out of context. And it was like that, so you don't need credit. We just want liberty. And it's
right.
A good saying, have you heard about the vast libertarian conspiracy? We want to take over the government and then leave you alone.
That's funny. And that, as far as the Dr. King monument, I mean, who knows how much they spent on it? I don't know. And the whole, all the hoopla that went with it. And then many people were disappointed by the way it looked. I find that funny.
Right. Yep.
Throwing that money
and
around.
They hired Chinese to do it. Everything's made by China.
Well, this
the
is
Chinese sculptor, right? Chinese people helping him. And they were like, well, you know, should this be made by Americans, maybe?
Yeah, that's funny.
You know, whatever.
Well, as I like to say, this is China's century. In fact, I was at the swimming pool shop the other day, and I had to get a part for my pool, and I said, a replacement part, I said, now I want you to give me the best Chinese-made part available. And they all get a kick out of that. I said, I want the best Chinese one you got. But I embrace China. It's their century, and they're going through their own industrial revolution. They're going to have their own problems, especially pollution, and this one-child problem is going to really mess things up. But for now, they're our banker, and I don't see it's foolish for the federal government to saber-rattle against China or lecture them about anything. Who is Uncle Sam to lecture China?
I love talking about the Chinese thing because people, what's going to be our next boogeyman, apparently.
Oh, of course.
They're a banker, so what are you going to do? Evidently, the greatest creditor country the world has ever known has a lower credit rating than the greatest debtor country the world has ever known. Peter Schiff talks about this. We when they lowered us to AA+, or the one rating agency did, he laughed. He said, well, he made that analogy. And then he said, but China has a AA-.
Wow.
Why does this make sense? You know?
Uh-huh. Well, I want the feds to go broke. I'm glad they lowered it. It should be a wake-up call to their mismanagement.
Oh, yeah. That guy caught heck. I haven't followed it much since then. I guess he got... I'm sure there were people in the powers that be that weren't too happy when that credit rating went down.
Well, that's their problem. And I'll tie us into this, that the fact that this... And I've said this before, that this country has numerous top-notch business schools that teach advanced accounting and advanced finance here in the good old USA. And you mean to tell me that these congressmen or this government, they can't manage money? They can't manage, you know, what they take in and not spend more than they take in? I mean, simple accounting principles?
Of course not. They're a bunch of criminals. It's all fraud.
Yeah, oh, it definitely. It definitely is. You know, organized theft, legalized theft. Now, is your background...
Yeah, power of the Treasury.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
Now, your background, are you... you work in as a broker?
Yeah, 10 years.
Uh-huh. In finance?
Yes, sir.
So now, you,
yep.
did you...
My firm is getting audited. Our routine 3-week audit right now. Just started this last week, so...
Uh-huh. Now, do you have a scholastic background in finance and marketing, or what is your...
Yeah, I have a minor in business, but, you know, I'm a salesperson
uh-huh.
who happens to be good at doing that stuff, you know. And,
oh, sure, sure. Again, you know, the fact that you and I and the rest of us, if we were to say, for example, and I think this liberals can even figure this out, is that if we or our any family or business that spent 1,000% more than they took in every year and continued to borrow money during that process. I mean, how long could they get away with that?
Yeah, well, Keynesianism rejects the idea that that there's a correlation between microeconomics and macroeconomics. They're completely different, you know, nonsense.
Sure, and the difference is that you and I or any other family or business, they can't print the money. So that gives the government the other edge of, you know, printing money and borrowing money, which continues to props up their fraud even more.
I spoke at the last Tea Party in Orlando, and that's what I focused on a little bit. And I brought up a silver coin and talked about that and a Federal Reserve note. And talked about that, and I showed $100 trillion in Bob Way note and talked about that. And
oh yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully, I got through to a couple there because, you know, I asked what. Here's an ounce of silver. What is that worth? And a few people knew. So that was interesting. You know.
Right, right. Now, how many people were there roughly when you addressed them, when you spoke with them?
A couple thousand at least. It was a good crowd.
Really?
Herman Cain was the last speaker. There was a lot of Fairfax people there. And, you know, one of the gripes from some of the local Tea Party people is that all these people will show up for those events, but they're not really helping that much at the grassroots level. So the Liberty portion of the Tea Party movement, or the Ron Paul Revolution, or whatever you want to look at it as. You know, we've got strength in numbers, and we got a lot of really bright people. We tend to attract the thinkers, and then, you know, the readers, people that read a lot of stuff, and that's exciting, because I think, like we were talking earlier with that generational, you know, about a generation younger, I think, you know, there's a lot of reason for optimism as long as we don't go, you know, spiral into chaos, and then, well, maybe even then we'll have the answers on the other side for them. We can fill the vacuum, you know.
I feel like a pessimistic optimist.
Yeah.
So now you, you also have. So you're the director, the state membership chair of the Campaign for Liberty.
Well, I'm actually the vice chair now, or they made me chair, and I was like, well, maybe vice chair is okay. I don't. Let's put some of these older guys that we got. We got a lot of doctors in the movement. We put one of them as a chair. And uh-huh. My co-vice chair is a doctor. And that's interesting, by the way. We've got 8 doctors in our group locally. You know?
Wow.
And I don't see any in the Tea Party group, things like that. It's because, you know, they think like Ron Paul. They want to actually cure the disease. You know? And they
Definitely.
Think about things like what caused the disease. And, you know, what are our treatment options? Let's put it on a regimen. There's the rest.
Now,
they just want, you know, the next promise.
True.
Or beat Obama. It's not enough to beat Obama. We need to beat Obama's practices and all of his ideas, you know?
Definitely. I saw some clips of him last night. He was speaking to a black conference, I think, in Washington, and his whole demeanor changed a bit, and he told them to take off their slippers and put their marching shoes on, and, you know, and he just wants to move forward enlarging the welfare state.
Yeah, I see him. And it's about control and power. It's, you know, they're willing to kill the golden goose to stay in power.
What gets
centralize
me,
their power.
Yeah, what gets me about his policies is that he, you know, he talks about his shovel-ready jobs and pass this jobs program. Well, he just wants to, you know, what, advocate a big chunk of our taxes to then pay for these jobs that are not long-term. It's not long-term investment. It's just a facade. I think
right.
It's almost
what
deliberate.
Is a job? You know, somebody, you know, one of our big guys just wrote an article, I think it was Tom Mullen, what is a job? You know, it's not productive or part of the productive sector. As Rand Paul calls the private sector the productive sector, then it's not really
right.
You know, not doing any good.
That's for sure. And so that's why I don't understand. Well, fortunately Obama has lost a lot of support, not only from his own party, but especially independents. I think people are waking up, and a lot of black America is probably very hesitant. Or they'll vote for him anyway, but, you know, a lot of them probably maybe think in the back of their minds that they've, as I like to describe it, elected this charlatan who is not about hope and change, who is, to me, is Bush 3 with a makeover on steroids. Bush was Hoover. Yeah. Obama's FDR, spending more in a shorter amount of time, expanding the wars.
Yep.
And as they like to say, there's many in the media and Obama supporters who like to say that all criticism of Obama is racism. Well, that's their way of shutting down dissent and criticism.
Yeah.
Because I think you would agree, if Obama was advocating the right free market principles and respecting and preserving individual rights, we'd be rooting for him.
Yeah, of course. It's not Obama. It's the ideas that we're upset about, you know, and it's a shame because some people don't get that. It's all, you know, they like to focus on the personality instead of the policies.
Right, and they overlook the fact that his supporters overlook the fact that, you know, we are, most of us, we're talking about his policies and what he advocates. It ain't the mm-hmm. color of his skin.
Nope.
You know, and I hate the fact that they try to accuse people of racism.
I talked to this brilliant woman that ran for office.
Pardon?
Go ahead. I was going to say, at the Presidency 5, I was talking to this woman I consider brilliant. She's an activist here in Florida, very good at fiscal conservative, and she said she was for Kanan. I said, well, what's your biggest reasons why? And one of them was that he's black, so he can beat Obama because he's black. And so that, why is that different than voting for him because he's black? You know, shouldn't matter at all. It's black, woman, man, anything. Politics we care about.
That's why I call Kane the Great White Hope.
Yeah,
relating it to the boxing thing, I think the traditional thing in boxing was they, you know, have come up with a white boxer that they think can beat the black contender boxer of the day. That's the Great White Hope. Well, now I've shifted it to Kane is the Great White Hope to beat Obama, another black man versus the black man who's in office. And the man who's in office is actually a mixed race black man, but da-da-da-da-da. So that's the humor I found in that.
Well, it's ridiculous because he openly says his proposals are revenue neutral.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
The other night
he said, if I had to cut a department, I'd cut the EPA. And then the next breath, not even a split second later, then I'll fix it. I'll create it again and fix it.
He'll fix it all right. Well, and I like to say we can thank the Nixon administration for the EPA, OSHA, 55-mile-an-hour speed limits.
Yeah.
And
that's the thing. And people like us sit there in the audience or watch these debates, and every other candidate, well, maybe Gary Johnson, well, not Gary Johnson, but when it was the eight candidates up there and Ron Paul was one of them, the other seven candidates, every answer is, we'll fix it. No, you can't fix it, guys. Come on. You know, you want to talk in one breath about how great Reagan was, you know, and hoping they're talking about his rhetoric, which was phenomenal. And then they want to fix it.
I know, and then these programs are enacted, the socialistic things like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, then Republicans in the future, they just continue to support them, and they just want to, tweak them a little bit. So they become part of the status quo. These so-called conservatives or Republicans, they support all that stuff. It becomes enshrined in the things that they support down the road.
Right. They move the paradigm, or they validate that paradigm, which means they can keep moving towards more government off of that foundation, higher and higher foundation of larger and larger government.
Definitely. That's why I like to have sound effective solutions, cut to the chase solutions for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, because yes, we don't want to throw people out in the streets, as Ron Paul has also said. We don't want to harm people who have paid into this, and they've had these empty, broken promises from the federal government about these things. But these programs must be reformed. I mean, Medicaid and Medicare. I mean, I've always been in favor of medical savings accounts and not a central. Not a federal welfare state. If the states want to help the less fortunate, poor, unemployed by giving them tax funded medical savings accounts that they would spend on their own, then I don't have too much of a problem with that as the means of getting there. But we would cut out so much in the meantime, including the drug war, Scott. That has to go. What a trillion-dollar waste of money that is.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's a shame. You'd think we'd learned from Prohibition the first time.
Well, and the thing about the drug war is the real addicts to the drug war are the politicians, the bureaucrats, and the cops who are addicted to the extra funding and all the militaristic gadgets they're getting. So they don't want to give it up. It's their gravy train, prison construction, prison unions like those three knock laws in California. They want, three felonies and you get a life sentence. So there's a lot of entrenched interests who want this drug war to continue. And when we see what it's done to Mexico, it's actually horrific. Are you still there or are we losing you? Well, folks, I think we've temporarily lost Scott. We'll try to get him back on. Might have been his cell phone. Was weak. I don't know. I heard it sort of going. But we'll...
I'm here.
Oh, you back? Okay. Mm-hmm. Gremlins. I hope it wasn't our opponents trying to interfere with our discussion.
It's a conspiracy, yeah.
Right, yeah. That's another word that they like to label, throw around, conspiracy theories. I'm not interested in conspiracies. Right. I'm interested in the facts of conspiracies. And,
yeah, it's just an effort to end questioning. Don't question that.
Definitely.
Usually when somebody throws that curveball at you, it should make you think that's a red flag, that maybe there's something to this. And,
sure.
Or, you know, it's, they use our patriotism and our fears against us to try to squish dissent. And, you know, there's actually examples where conspiracies have been true, you know.
Oh, of course. That's why here, the mighty PK, I don't let those accusations, I reject those accusations as a type of censorship, calling somebody conspiracy theory, saying that, or unpatriotic or racist, or my favorite one that I delve into deeply is that, of course, there are many in the media and otherwise who like to label all criticism of Israel, Zionism, or Jewish power as automatically labeled anti-Semitism. Ron Paul's been accused of anti-Semitism. Because he wants to cut the funding, not only for Israel, but everybody else. No more foreign aid. So somehow they make the link that you're anti-Semitic if you don't want to fund Israel.
Well, I think you're more anti-Semitic if we're going to go by their definition, if you're for the current policy, which funds their opponents 3-1, the regional adversaries.
Oh, yeah. It's awful. I want to see all that funding cut off. I hate what's happened to the Palestinians. We should find common ground. I've researched this. My, in a nutshell, solution is that we should find common ground immediately with, first of all, and most importantly, Jews united against Zionism, followed by the Israeli peace movement and Israeli human rights groups. We don't hear much about them, but they have a strong presence, and they don't back down from their views, but we don't hear much about them. But that's where I would focus the common ground areas with.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I think that's where the most vitriol comes against Ron Paul is these people that are the most rabidly pro, supposedly, again, back to the 3-1 funding thing, Israel. You know, it's
right.
Just bizarre. It's scary. I mean, some of them are so hateful towards Ron Paul that I see on Facebook, and there's several that I can show you that have, you know, 5,000 friends at the maximum, and they dedicate their whole existence to slamming Ron Paul because of this. And, you know, it just doesn't make sense. He's not anti-Jewish, for sure. He dedicated his most recent book to five Jewish guys, the luminaries. Nonsense. You know, and
yeah.
To say he was the only guy that supported Israel's right to attack the bomb, the Iraqi nuclear facility in 1983. Even Ronald Reagan condemned it. There's only one guy that stood up and said, yeah, it's their right to do that.
You know, I disagree with that because to me that was an act of war. What would be the difference? Because I remember when that happened in 81, and I was opposed to it then, and I still am, because what would the corollary of that be, like the U.S. to take out Russian nukes or Chinese nukes? We have the right to do that?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I phrased it poorly. Maybe the support is different than to say it's none of our business, you know.
Yeah.
It's between them. They want to handle their national defense that way, that's fine. Now, if Israel came and bombed an American nuclear facility because they were... I think Ron Paul has a different point of view there.
Oh, of course, of course. But I've been studying this whole... After 9/11, instead of ganging up on the demonization of Islam and Muslims, I started studying Jewish history, the history of Israel. So I've been in some heated discussions on this too, and I just deflect charges of anti-Semitism because as I look up right now in my office, I have Ludwig von Mises' photo above me. I'm a big fan of Murray Rothbard's and Ayn Rand's. So a lot of my leading intellectual mentors were Jewish. I donate to a think tank, the Ludwig von Mises Institute, whose mentor was Jewish. So, you know, I do the walk sorry, do the talk and do the walk. And I like, mm-hmm. I prefer the modern definition of an anti-Semite is a person that Jews don't like. So, and this is a sort of a tough path to go down. A lot of people don't want to go down. They're afraid to have this discussion, but I think it needs to be out in the open, especially this whole Israeli policy, because Israel is not our 51st state. And nowhere in the U.S. Constitution does it say that the American taxpayers are supposed to continuously fund Israel with foreign aid and an endless supply of American-made murder weapons. Now, I know we give foreign aid to their neighboring countries, too. I would cut all that off, too. But I still have a big problem with Israel in this. And the United States, again, had no enemies in the Middle East before 1948 when Israel was violently imposed on Palestine. And ever since then, this mess has happened, and all this U.S. aid to these countries just comes – it's blowback.
Yep. The subject, at least the subject, is becoming less taboo. You know, it's 10 years since 9/11. Some of our ideas that were shouted down are less shouted down. You know, I'm an America firster like you.
Yeah, I'm an America firster. You know, I make no secret of that.
And an American is also a liberty firster. Ben Franklin said, wherever there's liberty, there's my country. So you can even go one level further. It should be nice to bring more people to that. Because what is America about? It's supposed to be about liberty. It's not about, you know, all these other things that we do.
Right. It's not really necessarily about the land or where it is, because as long as these principles flourish, they could work in any country.
The grand experiment, yep.
That's right, and that's why, of course, I want my own country. And my own country would be based on three real-world examples I think you'll probably like. My country would be a combination of these three things: the free markets of Hong Kong, the social tolerance of Holland, and the self-governing canton system of Switzerland. Mm-hmm. With a healthy, healthy dose of liberty, property, and peace.
Yeah.
That's my whole thing.
Just want to be left alone. This idea that, like, Israelis or Iranian average people want this, you know, they don't. They just want to raise their kids. My buddy Tom says they just want to raise their kids. We get all, you know, the history of the world is kings fighting each other, bringing everybody else along for the ride.
Well, yeah, and now you've got these politicians doing it. They promote democracy so much, but some of these democracies are the worst warmongers. These politicians goad people into war. You know, and then governments get involved, and then people take sides, and so many people die, and all the wounded, and, you know, what a mess we're in now. 10 years in Afghanistan and all this mess in Iraq, all these vets coming back severely wounded who are going to need all this care, a lifetime of care. This also greatly ties into our budgets and our finances, as if we don't have enough trouble already with a healthcare system that, to me, is a very good system, what it has to offer, but it needs serious reform, not government control or ownership, but it needs reform.
Yeah.
And that's why, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, Scott, Ron Paul is the most capable presidential candidate ever. Not because I'm idolizing him as some Obama-type person, it's because Ron Paul thoroughly understands Austrian economics and the ethics of liberty. Plus, he's a doctor. He has the knowledge and the memory of what it was like before Medicare and Medicaid, and how, you know, how there was charity, how this stuff worked. And I guess we had insurance then, but it wasn't heavily mandated. And the more the government, as you know, gets involved in the private insurance industry, the worse it gets.
I think that was a great argument. You nailed it.
And here's one for you too. I didn't originate this, so I can't take credit for it. But, you know, the government doesn't help Scott get his home insurance or his car insurance or his boat insurance. But miraculously, they get involved with the health insurance deal.
Yeah, it's all about power and control and ego and just self-love and narcissism. And these guys, these politicians are insane. They're sociopaths. You know, they just have to tinker and intervene. And the only thing that works is freedom. You know, and we're lucky to have somebody like Ron Paul come along to cure the apathy of so many people like us that are sitting there shaking our heads separately, you know, across the globe. And now we have a conduit, a rallying point to start the healing process. And, you know, if he doesn't win, we're not going away. His son will inherit us, I think. Ron Paul army is not going to go away. We're so lucky to have Rand right behind him. He's not as, you know, as astute as his dad, but he's pretty darn good.
He's good. I much prefer the father to the son. I think the father is more principled. I think the son, I think Rand is too willing to cut a deal with the military-industrial complex. I like him. I'm glad he's on board. Hopefully he'll become even more principled.
In his career. He made trying to build his relationships to gain influence and access. And then I don't think he thinks differently than his father. I think he knows the liberty philosophy inside and out. He knows economics inside and out as well as anyone except Ron, maybe.
And he is a doctor, which is another great thing.
Yeah, yeah. And he seems to have a personal integrity that we also seem to, you know, love about Ron.
And speaking of integrity, here's something I'd like to mention. I told a few people this over the convention time I spent there, and I also passed Ron a note on a Friday with some suggestions about specific wording. I would never want to water down his message or our message, but I'll mention this to you if I haven't already, and we should always let all of our friends and those around us who are engaged in, promoting the ideas of liberty and the campaign for liberty, or Ron Paul and all this other stuff, is that whenever we speak about foreign policy, we should try, and I make a conscious effort to always do this, we should never use the words we, America, or us. We should always say the federal government. Because when you say the federal government, then it clearly puts the blame where it belongs, and we don't mix we or America in with the people, because the people and the government are two separate things. That's why I like that saying about, hey, I love my country, but I fear my government.
Yeah. The duty of the patriot to defend its country from his government. That's a good quote.
Right. So I wanted to share that with you, because we didn't go into Iran in 1953 and overthrow Mossadegh, the federal government and their CIA and MI6 did
probably
that.
Probably a handful of people that had too much clout and too much free time.
Right.
The interest was they had kicked out BP Oil or something like that, and wasn't going to stand, apparently.
Yeah, the Iranian oil company. Yeah, I've studied a lot of that, too.
They had nationalized their own oil and said, get out, you know.
Britain screwed that up because, as I understand it, they were only giving Iran like 16% of the profits. Now, if they had given Iran a nice bigger chunk, they probably still would have had a nice British investment there, happier people on both sides. Iran would have got a bigger profit, and Britain would have had a real nice source of oil. But
that's fine. Libertarians would be fine with that as long as it's agreed. You know,
right.
If the country agrees to that, then so be it.
And I don't even demonize Venezuela. I mean, I deplore Chavez's socialist domestic agenda, but I like the way he stands up to U.S. foreign policy. You know, I make a distinction. And this whole Middle East nonsense, this crap about get dependent on foreign oil, well, the U.S., as I understand it, gets 25% or less of its oil from the Middle East. Most comes from Canada, Mexico, and Venezuela.
Half comes from here.
So, you know, let's not you and I, but I mean, let's be more truthful about where this oil really comes from.
Right. Well, we produce nearly as much as Russia and Saudi Arabia. It's Russia that's number one now, I believe. We're just behind them. But we consume twice as much as we produce, so that other half is the big.
Yeah.
Oil industry. We got plenty of oil. We just consume more than we. Probably.
Well, because we produced more, or we did produce more, you know, and so now only have these other global competitors. You know, China's got a hungry oil needs, and so does India. But what I like about China is, you know, as has been said, they're not going across the world. with their military hammering people and intimidating countries. They're cutting deals. They're buying agricultural land in Africa. They're buying, you know, they're getting oil where they can. I think one of the reasons we intervened in Libya was to kick China out over there.
Makes sense. I mean, it's always about, I mean, you can't remove the economic components from our foreign policy. You just can't. People try. It's out there.
You know? Yeah, of course. Of course. But we could have, you know, the foreign policy of the founders, which I like to advocate is, of course, is armed neutrality and free trade. You know, and goodwill between nations. As Mises pointed out, you know, nature did not distribute natural resources equally throughout the world. No. So through commerce and markets, we can get what we need. We don't need to be threatening and saber-rattling and all this nonsense.
Yeah.
In fact, what I like to say about China, humorously, is that here China has like a Marxist-communist government, but it's almost easier to start or open a business there, I've been told, than it is in the U.S. So does this mean that the U.S. is going to need a communist government to impose a free market economy on the country?
The more free market, anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and this is why I had mentioned to you, I'm tooting my own horn now, is that I would like to shoot a show where I would have my band and I would host a show in like a Bill Maher format. You have different guests on with plenty of humor mixed in, but it wouldn't be connected to anything. It'd be our own private town hall meeting where everybody's invited, but, you know, Campaign for Liberty is welcome, but their signs wouldn't be up. It wouldn't be a Ron Paul thing. We would speak our minds and talk about our own solutions to these problems. We don't want politicians could attend, but on my dime, they wouldn't be welcome to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Would that interest you? Do you like that idea?
Yeah. Well, sure. Yeah, it's about making it happen. You know, there's always that's the big thing is getting everybody committed and going the same direction. You know?
Well, I can make it happen as far as the resources to do it, but I would need some help. You know, co-producing it and certain guests. I'd love to have like Tom Woods or DiLorenzo on and have a panel like a Bill Maher panel in a sense. Yes, I would rip him off in a sense with some humor too and sort of the format. But I'm a libertarian. I am not a guy who says he's a libertarian, but has become more liberal. And you know, I can be funny. I don't need to be vulgar, but I like to keep the humor mixed in too. So that's something
I've wanted
to do and get it from the back burner to the front burner. And also, I don't know if there's any networks I could get it on, maybe cable, if it become a weekly or a monthly thing, is something that I would like to do. You know, I would host it, but I have that, you know, I know economics, I know history. So it would be like, you know, Johnny Carson having his show, but Johnny also knowing the material. But so I would come down from the bandstand and host it, and I would have, you know, different interesting guests. But it would be going down our path. It would not be neocons or rhinos. We're going to put out, you know, our message, which is the message of liberty.
Message of freedom, yep.
So, I might be sounding you about your intellectual help or advice about this in the future. Because, again, it's not going to be tied to any group. So it's not going to be affiliated with anything. It's going to be affiliated with just a freedom and a private function, a private affair that goes down the path we choose to go on because it's on our dime and we're not beholden to anybody.
That's the beauty. That sounds like the concept behind the Tea Party, that they've, you know, they've strayed a little bit, and it's an easy thing to do.
Politicians
are very seductive, and they like, to, you know.
Like to invite them, the Tea Party folks, and try to convince them. And again, it's beyond my dime, and try to convince them that they need to sort of purge themselves of the militaristic aspect. And keep in mind, folks, we are very pro gun rights and gun ownership, but at the same time, we oppose this militarism and this, you know, we're anti-war in the sense that it's not for our defense. It's projecting a globalist empire, which we don't want.
Right.
Yeah, it's not productive. We need to keep educating them on the basics of economics.
Definitely, and that would come from the show also. So it wouldn't cater to any other. It wouldn't be like Fox or CNN. It wouldn't cater to any of the other ideologies. It would be going down our path, which is why I've named my show here Third Stream View, because it's not the left-right paradigm. It's not the Republican-Democrat paradigm, which is why I have a costume with a man with, the two-headed man, the one government party with two heads.
Yeah.
You're familiar with that. And you're also familiar with the expression of one bird of prey with two wings?
Yes.
Well, I have a nice big bird of prey costume, and I would literally have the two wings in Republican, Democrat, or welfare, warfare state, because, Scott, people also listen with their eyes. So I would have this humorous stuff and these characters up there, too, from time, popping in and out. So a little bit of I like Carol Burnett and Bette Midler, the way they had some over-the-top humor, but I would mix that in with an intellectual message of liberty, property, and peace. So that's something for you to keep in mind if you want to help get on board in the future. I hosted a Ron Paul rally 3 years ago where my band played for it. It was a couple days before the Florida primary. The attendance wasn't as good as I would hope to have been, but it was nice that people did show up, and I spoke briefly. And so if we do this other one, I'll speak about how I'm a Ron Paul supporter and how I was on his campaign in 1988. So That's something where I want to come from. Plus, I want to host this. I want to see what I can pull off, and of course film it, and try to promote it. So if we were able to shop it somewhere, it'd be great if I could get some sponsors and just do a weekly thing where I would. But it would still be live music. It would be my band playing great American rhythm and blues music, which is something I also like to promote, Scott. Because no matter where a person lies on the spectrum, I don't care if they're the most far left socialist American. Everybody loves American music in all its forms. There's almost no argument there whatsoever, because you can't dispute the greatness of, rock and roll, soul, funk, blues, country, Zydeco, all Western swing, all this music. This is something that we take for granted, but American music, I don't wave the flag much, but I will wave the flag about American music, because anywhere you go in the world is pretty much welcome, and you'll hear it being played. And I like to tie that in, too, with my message of liberty, because people like music, and especially if it's good music and music that's appealing to their ears, it helps promote the message even more. So that's why I'd like to mix the two together.
Yeah, I've read articles that say that American culture did more to win the Cold War than anything else. People in the Eastern Bloc countries saw that, and they wanted it. And they heard the music, and it inspired them, and they wanted to be free.
They loved American jazz. So American jazz musicians used to go over to Poland and the Soviet bloc and, to thunderous applause and appreciation of this music overseas. With that, Scott, I'm going to wind down here, and I thank you so much again for coming on, and I enjoyed our chat. I hope you come back again soon and get to know each other more, see where I'm coming from. I kind of know where you're coming from. I like being around the Campaign for Liberty folks, good people. I always want to promote that, but I have my own agenda too, which of course is the message of liberty, property, and peace. And with humor mixed in and with an unflinching way to defend it and a Teflon exterior, which is why I like some of your comments I've seen on Facebook, how you've stood up to critics or some of these people who try to bait you on Ron Paul or this and that. So you keep up the good things, too, that you've been up to. So I appreciate, again, you coming on here at Third Stream View. As I wind down and sign off here, Third Stream View is heard every Monday evening on bbsradio.com, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern, every Monday at bbsradio.com. And I'm your not-so-humble host, PK, saying thanks for listening in, everyone, and we'll we'll talk to you again next week. Good night, everybody.